Welcome to the Mug Meetings Summaries Podcast. I'm Gilbert de Tillieu. Our final mini topic for the May meeting featured Robert Kaiser talking about LDAP.
I am doing a small presentation, very small, very quick, on LDAP and its applications. This is not meant to replace Sean's talk, which I will still make him do over the primary domain controller and LDAP. Honestly, that's what should be happening. This is just simply why you would use it and very simply how to get it working with PAM and POSIX accounts. That's basically what I'm going to go over. I'm going to try and do this in like 10 minutes, so if you want more information, stop me. Otherwise, I'm just going to go through this. LDAP does stand for Lightweight Directory Access Protocol. Basically, it's a very, very standardized protocol. As most of you know, there's tons of RFCs. That's LDAP v3, the RFC that links to all the other RFCs. LDAP itself is structured very much like a B-tree, in that there is a top root, everything else is nodes off of it. And the tree itself is your organizational structure. So it makes querying it a lot easier. You don't have to say, like with CouchDB, for example, you just have a mess of documents and then you use functions to figure out what that data is. This is very much structured, sort of like you have tables in a relational database. Not really, but sort of. There you go. What does it do? Basically anything. It stores data. I'll go through applications in a little bit, but it really does just store data. With OpenLDAP, standard is BDB or HDB, but it can have all kinds of different backends. You can power it with relational databases, shell scripts if you really want to do something crazy, other LDAP servers, as well as replication. So you can push out, you can have a high availability with a whole bunch of read-only LDAP servers and have one read write, just like you would with a MySQL cluster or something. It's used for standardization is its main point. It can act as a PDC. It works well with Active Directory in some respects. you have to play with it, but it does store huge amounts.
What's the PDC?
PDC is Primary Domain Controller. Basically, it's Domain Controller for Windows.
Okay.
It does store huge amounts of data. The data that one of the companies I worked for stored was something around 200 megabytes of actual hard data that was queried almost. Well, it was queried every single second. It is, like I said, high availability as possible. You can do replication. You can do backups, live migrations, everything like that. And everything has a plugin to LDAP. Anything that you want has a plugin to LDAP. If it doesn't, you can write a small script to make it authenticate to LDAP. There's very, very small, very small. Basically anything. Like I said, anything. I really did mean it. I mean, this is what I use it for a lot of the time. Calendar backends are possible through, like, so you can populate your iCal with it, as well as DNS. I've actually seen some DNS servers which will actually show, because it's such low response time, you actually get DNS servers querying LDAP, and so you can have a massive amount of DNS servers caching it, and then just query back every once in a while, instead of having their own local caches of what's going on. And yeah, demo, very quickly. Like I said, very quickly. Hopefully that's not blocked. I hope it's not.
No, SSH should be fine.
Come on, get there, get there. Yay! Alright, so, very quickly, go through these notes. That's all you need to set it up with, say, Debian. I could go through OpenBSD, that's what I primarily use. OpenBSD is great because it is very, very, very stable, plus it has OpenLDAP, server, all that stuff, and it tends not to change as much as this stuff. I ran into an issue where the newer version of OpenLDAP actually gives you the configuration is actually loaded in LDAP itself, which creates a chicken and egg problem, but they managed to do it with a hack, and now all your configuration is stored in LDAP, so you can modify it in runtime, is the idea behind it. I prefer the standard, you know, slapd.conf, which just works. More to the point, here's really, really quickly how to install it. Slapd LDAP utils. I'll make this full screen and make the font a little bigger. There you go. This is, you know, Debian, so it does it. Oh, I shouldn't have done that. Whatever, I can get around that. Yeah, there we go. Do it again. Yes. Shit. Oh. Great. Doesn't exist. I hate Debian packages at some points.
So that will fail. We'll just clean it up for now. Basically, let me. That's why it's still there. Yeah, that's fine. Okay. So we'll just install that. Install. So, really simply, domain name. So I'll just do this, for example. .ca. So you specify that's the top level. So, like it says there, foo.example.org will create dc equals foo, dc. That's basically the top or base DN. And then this is because it's Debian, it's dumb, and it asks you for, you know, instead of the base DN, it asks you for the DN. It should just do it off the same thing, but it's dumb. And some administrative password, it doesn't really matter. And what backend you want to use. This is default, you can get other ones for it, but yeah, there you go. Database was removed when Slack view is purged. No. Again, Debian specific. Move the old database? Yes, because I had stuff in there. This is an important one because LDAP v2, some things still require version 2 binding. V3 is supported on most things. V2 I found specifically with EJEB or D, it did require V2 binding. So if it doesn't work, if it has protocol errors on whatever you're trying to authenticate to it, try and allow in V2. It really doesn't matter for most things, but it's one config line. There you go. Starting up and done. It's running. Yay, it's running. You can see it there. So, crap, notes again. So, now that you've got that installed, you can, I'll show you the base. So, LDAP uses LDIF formatting, but basically it's what, you know, it's made out of. So, it distinguishes the tree itself. So, I'll move that up so you can see it. But all it is distinguish name and then the full name. Note that this is actually the base or the root of the LDAP tree. So what it's doing is it's creating a people object, OU, organizational unit is people, and the object class is an organizational unit. Simple enough, it's just creating a container, basically, so that then you can separate out things. And this is creating a group object, which again is an organizational unit. So the command you use to do it is LDAP add. This does it in runtime. It is possible to stop the LDAP database, modify the database using slap configuration, commands. That is really frowned upon. LDAP is designed to, you know, do it in runtime. So, if I do this, that's very simply, I could give you a whole spiel about LDAP add and all the tools.
Would you like a chair?
No, I'm good. The dash X is for simple authentication, dash D is what you bind to. And so you have to bind to admin or root to be able to write to it by default. Again, with the slapd configurations, you can actually set permissions properly so that users can... Whoops, did I do that? Oh, no, I didn't do anything. Okay. You can actually set up, you know, you can a user can change their own password if they have bound to their own ID already, but otherwise they can't change it, right? Obviously. So, the dash W is to prompt for a password. Lowercase w lets you specify one on the terminal line, but, yeah. And dash F is simply the file. So, if I do that, ask me for the password. That is to bind to that specific, you know, cn equals admin, which is a simple permission object that's created on Debian by default. OpenBSD, it's not. You actually have to create it when you do this base as well. But there you go. Type in the password, hit enter. Gives you a nice, you know, what's going on. So if I do an LDAP search, just to show you what's going on, LDAP search dash X, which is just simple, and it doesn't, you can specify queries later on, but that's what's in the LDAP tree right now. There's your top root. You've got an admin object, which again is a simple security object. Debian creates it by default. What do I care? You've got your people and your group organizational units. And you can add some user. So there's some user. Now note that this creates a common name of some user under the group object, which we just created, under the base. Basically, it's just a couple down. Common name, some user. Git number, these are actually specifically defined in a schema of what you can and cannot and must define to add it to the LDAP tree.
It's a way of standardizing it so that it knows, you know, a POSIX account must have a UID number. Because if you're going to authenticate, you want to be able to have a unique identifier. So that's what it is. Basically, GID number, so group ID number. It's to the top. It's a POSIX group. This is a unique identifier. Some people use CN, but the problem becomes CN, you can have people with the exact same name, and then you have to change their name to be add a 1 to the end of it. Unique identifier changes that so that when you use CN right here, you can actually have their correct name in the database as opposed to having their correct name being, you know, Robert Kaiser 1 or whatever. So, standard stuff. This is a person, it's a POSIX account, and it's a shadow account. That means that it can actually have a shadow password. Login shell and home directory, those are standard stuff that you would put into it. There are other options. I'm not going to get into it, but very simply, do the exact same command with a different LDAP. Great, it's there. Again, LDAP search will give you, look, it exists in the database. Simple enough. First thing you want to do is set a password for that some user. Well, you do that with the LDAP password command. Again, simple authentication, bind this username, like this distinguished name, technically, prompt for the password, and then what you're changing the password on. This is the full distinguished name for that object. So UID equals the user I created underneath the people object, underneath the base. If I do this, it goes, oh crap, I hit enter one too many times. So, new password, I'm just going to set it to test, prompts you twice, then it says enter your LDAP password, that's for what you need to bind to set it. If you set it up correctly, you can actually bind as the exact same thing you're setting, and that would be your current password right there. Great, doesn't give you any errors, it's done.
Like that.
Yeah, well, you can script it.
Yeah.
Next thing is your NSS objects. So, really simply, Debian is just libnss LDAP. But poof, it's already installed because I was lazy. Configuration files are in here, so I'm just going to... doesn't help if I, you know, type in the command. This is, again, done with debconf because I'm running a Debian system, but all you really need to care about is your base, which is set right here, and your URI. This is where you can set LDAPS, for example. You can also set up multiple LDAP servers and do it so that it has replication or failover, in that this server will, if it doesn't get a response from that LDAP server, it will use that one. Whatever. Again, this is V3. You know, some things will need it, some things won't. The other option, there's all kinds of other options in here, again. One common thing that some people do, I don't know why, is they create it so that to read data, you must bind first, which means you must authenticate to some object somewhere first. That usually is not set up, but if it is, for some reason, you can use this.
City would have picked us up to activate.
Yeah, exactly. And,
we do that for NIS, trust relationships, because you don't want people poking around and they're guessing.
Exactly, yeah. And I would imagine if you're exposing the LDAP server to the public, you would need this so that you can authenticate as an internally known user to then look at what's going on next. Again, this is how you do it. You just specify the bind DN and the password to that. You don't need it in this case. That's already set up for me, so I'll go back to my notes. Then your actual NSS switch, which controls all kinds of stuff. This was originally password compat along with group compat. I just changed that to files LDAP. So NSS will automatically look for the files first. If it doesn't find it there, it'll go to LDAP. Simple enough. And then install that module for PAM. So that is the pluggable authentication module. And because we're Debian, we give you nice GUI over what I can, you know, authenticate to. PAM LDAP included. Great. So we got that. Now, what happens if we do ID some user? It exists because we've defined it in NSS switch. So in NSS switch, it didn't find it in the Unix system, so it went to the LDAP system, and it found it in the LDAP system. Again, because it's set up correctly, you can do group some user, or group some user. That user is a valid POSIX user. They have a unique user ID of 20,000. Usually that's where LDAP starts, but that's whatever. It's meant so that it's completely out of the way of local users. If you get conflictions, it is hell. Again, groups can be done, and I can show you that really quickly by just simply creating a new group create another group called some group for the sake of simplicity, and give it a unique GID number of 20,001. Cap my notes and add that whole command again, but I'm lazy, so I just copy paste. Save that as temp group. Invalid DN specified.
Min Robert Pasher.
DC equals.
Ah, yes, thank
not
you.
D equals here.
Great. So you can see that that group now exists as well. You've got a group for some user, and you've also got a group for some group. I'm not going to get into creating multiple users and then playing around with groups, because you get the idea. They are completely valid groups. They are completely valid users. And you can go so far as to, well, use them in anything. I mean, I've used them for setting up permissions and basically saying, you can log into this thing, and there you go. It works, right? Simple enough. I think that's all I had with notes for the most part. Yeah. So I'll do one small thing. I will SSH into user. Since I set the password to that account, and I have libpam set up properly, I can now log in as that user just using SSH. And poof, I'm in. I'm some user, and it said, could not see it due to that because I didn't have the PAM makeholder module loaded, but that's an easy fix if you wanted to add that. So that's really simply how to set up LDAP with a NIC system. With Debian, Ubuntu, all those, it's fairly simple. Any Linux is fairly simple because it is NSS switch. When you get into the BSDs, playing around with login.conf for LDAP for OpenBSD can be problematic, but it is doable in a similar fashion. And I'll do a very simple. Here's an example of LDAP being used, you know, as an OpenVPN front end. So that's my login credentials for, say, ThinkBox. I set that up to use LDAP, in that that is the one credential that you need to get access to whatever you have access to. This one is probably blocked, 1195 here, right? I would imagine that's blocked.
Yeah.
But it actually does work, and then I could show you VMware working with it too. But basically, the idea is that you get everything working with LDAP so that people have one place to change the password. You don't have to go, okay, well, do I have access to that? This way, I even have developers who have access to specific VMs based on their login credentials. They don't have access to the infrastructure machines, but they have access to all their development machines. It allows you to do files that way as well. I mean, I have a file server set up that way. People can log in, they can store files, you can have shared groups, but if you're not in that group, it's standard POSIX permissions. And yeah, I think that's about it. Before I forget, I'm going to change my screen back, because that'll otherwise die. And I'm done. That was very simple. Done. Yeah.
All right.
Any questions before
I... Questions for Op.
What size organization do you start looking at using something like that for?
What size organization do you start having problems with password management and user credentials? Usually around 7 or 8, because at that point, some one system administrator is like, why would I keep track of everybody's credentials on... Depending on the size of what you're doing, I mean, you could have up to 10 different places where you need to change somebody's password. What happens when somebody leaves the company? Well, for this, it's one command to delete their entry in LDAP or change their field to inactive. They don't have access to anything now, as opposed to logging into each device and disabling that account. So I'd say 7 or 8, but that's just me. Yeah. Well, no, because it's using, because libpam is smart enough on a POSIX system, if you use passwd, it would actually change your LDAP password, assuming you have credentials that if you bind to that username, it'll update that password. It all depends on your LDAP setup and also the implementation you do with the libpam. I mean, I've set it up so that you can basically change a password if you want to. With Windows domain controllers, which I will get Shrine Code in to do, because this did not do any kind of justice to LDAP and why it's useful, you can actually get people to change the passwords on Windows, and it'll propagate up to everything, which is really handy.
Yeah.
because you don't have to teach somebody how to change a password anywhere else. And that's off. Yep. Okay, I'm done. I'm out of here.
All right.
That's it for this podcast. Thanks for listening. For more Mug Meetings summaries or for more information about the Manitoba Unix User Group, check out our website at muug.mb.ca.